Last week, President Donald Trump signed an executive order aiming to curb anti-Semitism in the United States.
This action makes clear that Title VI of the Civil Rights Act, which prohibits the federal funding of universities and other institutions that engage in discrimination, applies to institutions that traffic in anti-Semitic hate.
Some, including the Anti-Defamation League, have praised the executive order and are hopeful that it will crack down on incidents of anti-Semitism on college campuses. According to the ADL's most recent data, anti-Semitic incidents on campuses rose 89% from 2016 to 2017. But others fear it's an attack on free speech and have concerns over the placement of anti-Semitism under Title VI, which includes protections for race and national origin, but not religion. President Trump signed the executive order at a ceremony doubling as the White House Hanukkah party, where he hosted Robert Jeffress, the pastor of First Baptist Dallas, and the Reverend John C. Hagee, both of whom have made inflammatory comments about Jewish people and Muslims in the past. And just days before, the president used some common anti-Semitic stereotypes when he spoke to the Israeli American Council.
A lot of you are in the real estate business because I know you very well. You're brutal killers, not nice people at all, but you have to vote for them. You have no choice. You're not going to vote for Pocahontas, I can tell you that.
Trump also came under fire in 2017 after the Unite the Right rally in Charlottesville, where he said, quote, there were very fine people on both sides, despite a group of white nationalists chanting, quote, Jews will not replace us. Now, whether the president's executive order will actually protect Jewish Americans is creating deep divides within the Jewish community. I'm Tanzina Vega, and that's where we start today on The Takeaway. For more, I'm joined now by Yair Rosenberg, senior writer at Tablet Magazine, and Kenneth Stern, director at the Bard Center for the Study of Hate and the author of the forthcoming book, The Conflict Over the Conflict, the Israeli-Palestine Campus Debate. Welcome to you both.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Kenneth, let's start with you. You actually wrote the definition of anti-Semitism that the White House is using in the executive order. Explain to us how you wrote it, why you wrote it the way you did.
Sure. I was the lead drafter. There were others that had hands in it. But basically, what happened was when the peace process collapsed and there were attacks that were escalating against Jews in Europe, there was an organization tasked with monitoring it. And it had a failed report, then it had another report that basically was trying to come up with some sort of standard because it needed to know what to include and what to exclude from different countries so you can monitor anti-Semitism over time. So colleagues and I worked with this monitoring group precisely because there was an attack on a Jewish school in Montreal and as retaliation for Israeli killing of a Hamas leader. And we wanted to give some ideas of what these data collectors should use. But then what happened was in 2010, when it became clear that the Department of Education was allowing, in my view favorably, Jews to be protected under Title VI. And I brought a case against a school district in Binghamton where Jews were kicked. There was a Kick a Jew Day. There were groups on the far right that had this great idea that said, let's take this definition, marry it with the new Title VI purposes, and then they started trying to police campus speech. And that's what President Trump really gave them the power to do this week.
So I want to bring up, you mentioned Title VI, Kenneth. Yair, I want to talk a little bit about what that means, because religious affiliation is not protected under Title VI. This executive order would make Jews a protected class. And one of the sticking points for some American Jews is that this would imply that Judaism is a nationality. Yair, is that a correct interpretation of the order so far?
I'm glad you asked that. So there are two versions of this executive order. There's the sort of version that existed on Twitter before the text came out, and then the version that actually exists in the text. And the version on Twitter that was based on, I think, some mistaken reporting initially, thought that this executive order was going to redefine Jewish identity, Judaism, as a nationality. Now, some Jews do see themselves as a nation, but others do not. And this is a contentious internal issue that isn't really for governments to decide. But what the actual executive order does is actually just apply Obama-era president, and actually before that, Bush-era president, to Title VI, which, as you mentioned, doesn't actually say we protect people who are discriminated based on religion, which seems like a big omission. And so what previous administrations have done is said, actually, we are going to protect people who experience religious discrimination, whether they're Jewish, Muslim, Sikh, others. And the way we're going to do this is we're going to grandfather them into the other things the act already protects and say, well, yes, the act doesn't cover people being discriminated based on their religion, but people attack Jews on the basis of what they perceive to be their nationality or what they perceive to be their race, even though those Jews don't necessarily define themselves as a nationality or race.
So, Yair, I want to make that point very clear, because this seems to only protect, specifically protect Jewish communities, but not members of other faiths and religions. Is that right?
Well, this is the real amusing thing about this executive order. This was already the case. The Obama administration under Tom Perez, who is now the head of the DNC, but then was the assistant attorney general for civil rights, he created this policy that says all these religious groups are covered under Title VI because people construe them as nationalities and races and will protect them as such, even if they don't see themselves that way. And that way the government can protect them. And now Trump signed an executive order saying the same thing, which already was the policy.
But not so including the Muslim Americans, for example.
Well, because this was, to him, was an executive order on anti-Semitism being signed on Hanukkah. So he probably assumes that that's why he's only talking about this thing. But obviously, yes, I think we would doubt that he would then reiterate the doctrine on Muslims. But it should be clear that it is currently the policy and the law to protect Muslims and Sikhs and others in the same way. The question is, why did Trump decide to say something that was already the policy and try to trot it out as, I think you already gestured to this, Trump has made anti-Semitic comments himself. Trump has been accused of tolerating anti-Semitism. So in order to shield himself, he created this executive order where he reiterates something that's already policy to hold himself up as a champion on anti-Semitism, when in fact this is something that's already been on the books.
Kenneth, what is the controversy specifically among the Jewish American community about this act? Is it the initial interpretation of personal identity tied to nationalism, or is it something else?
For me, the real problem is the incorporating of a definition. You don't need it. As I said, I took a Title VI case for Jews and won it without it. And it's really about speech about Israel. Jared Kushner's op-ed in the New York Times was spot on. It wants to define anti-Zionism as anti-Semitism. Is anti-Zionism sometimes expressed as anti-Semitism? Sure. But to give a blanket statement like that on a college campus where you're supposed to be considering ideas really undermines the whole purpose of the campus. And we've seen applications of this definition in other places that ought to scare anybody who's concerned about free speech and academic freedom. It was applied in the UK and an Israel apartheid week, as much as I disagree with the idea behind it, was not allowed as part of government policy because it couldn't be squared with the interpretation of this definition. So as much as I agree with Yair about the politics of this, I think there's something that really precedes it, which is groups on the Jewish right who do not like, and I understand it, some vilification of Israel that could be in line with some of the things that we were doing for data collectors, denying Israel's right to exist or holding all Jews responsible. Those are expressions that they're trying to get at with this definition. And the parallel is this: you don't need under Title VI a definition of racism to decide to go after a racist, hostile environment, or discriminatory one. But what if somebody decided they wanted to do that? Then you have the question, okay, is opposition to affirmative action a type of expression that would be relevant to considering racism? Would desiring to have Confederate statues remain on your campus? Would inviting a Charles Murray be an example? You could have lists of things that are speech, and that would be problematic and be very clear in that context. Using this definition in this way on campus-related things to Israel is the same problem, and it's going to harm not only pro-Palestinian speech, it's going to harm Jewish students, going to get a reputation as trying to shut down speech they don't like. It's going to give a disincentive to faculty who want to teach on these issues, knowing that there's groups out there that are going to be hunting potential lawsuits. And the thing that scares me the most is that you have administrators now who know the metric is, I want to protect us from getting sued. I'm going to have to at least speak out and condemn this type of political speech that ought to be able to be on campus without the government's thumb on it.
Yair, I want to get your thoughts on that. Where do you see the line between free speech here and protections on college campuses, specifically, Yair?
Well, I want to say something for Ken's definition, because Ken's definition is a very good one. The IRA definition is a very good definition of anti-Semitism, and it tries to, as he spoke at the beginning, distinguish between what is anti-Israel and what is anti-Semitic. And as a result, it has very careful and hedged language that says, you know, this may be considered anti-Semitic, which is saying the person applying the definition with careful judgment can determine in context if this particular expression is anti-Semitic. And this gets to, I think, what a lot of Jews are very worried about with this executive order, is that we have zero trust in the Trump administration. to apply this fairly, whether it comes to Palestinian activism or it comes to Jews, because President Trump has repeatedly said things that are anti-Semitic and tolerated anti-Semitism in his circles. So it seems like if you're going to have this very sensitive definition that you're going to apply in sensitive areas, you'd want sensitive people applying it. And there seems to be very little evidence of that. And that's why you're seeing, I think, a lot of concern about the executive order, even as it's taking a good definition and it's also reiterating previous policy. It's about the people applying it. And also this, I think, is an important point to emphasize, because regardless of whether this definition was there or this executive order, these are the people in power. And they were going to do this thing whether or not they had this executive order or not. And this has been a concern in the Jewish community, outside the Jewish community, and among Palestinian activists before the executive order was there. And if they were to take it away, it would still be a concern, because it's about the people who are making the decisions.
Kenneth, is the president using the Jewish community as a political tool?
Well, I think he is. The problem that I have is that some of the Jewish community are letting him. The views on Israel should not trump concerns on anti-Semitism. And we've seen that beyond Trump. We've seen the Zionist Organization of America vet people like Steve Bannon. And it happens on both sides of the political spectrum. The people's views of Israel sort of cloud. They're looking at whether anti-Semitism is being promoted or not.
Yair, how do you explain the rise of anti-Semitic sentiment and attacks across the United States, not just on college campuses, as we mentioned, the 89% increase from 2016 to 2017, but just in general across this country?
So I think the Anti-Defamation League has actually looked into these statistics themselves, and what they've said is they have not seen an increase in the number of people who believe anti-Semitic things in recent years, but they've seen an increase in people willing to act on them. And I think that says something about the political and cultural climate that we're in, that's heavily polarized, that's extremely angry, and often looking for scapegoats. And Jews are a very prominent scapegoat in those situations, which I think gets us back to this executive order, which is something that's worth stressing, is that this is a really concerning thing for many in the Jewish community, because they want to act on this and they want to do something about this. The problem is the people in power right now are not people that necessarily a lot of Jews trust.
So then, Yair, how do Jewish leaders who support the president reconcile with that hypocrisy, with these anti-Semitic tropes, and yet this executive order?
Well, so the idea, I think, first of all, when it comes to, say, like the Anti-Defamation League, this is a group that's been very critical of Trump, and many of these Democratic members of Congress who are Jews have been critical of Trump, but they supported the executive order because they said, we can't wait till we get a new president to act on this issue. You know, we have to take what we can get, because it's a difficult time. Obviously, people who support Trump think that Trump is a strong supporter of Israel. They think that maybe he'll voice anti-Jewish stereotypes sometimes, but he means them sort of as joking compliments, and so they don't take them as offensive. Now, that's a minority in the Jewish community, but it does exist.
Kenneth Stern is the director of the Bard Center for the Study of Hate, and Yair Rosenberg is a senior writer at Tablet Magazine. Thanks for joining me.
Thank you.
Thank you.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.